Ojore drags me back. My eyes sting as he pulls me away from the fight.
Don't let them escape!
Mother points at the seven figures who charge through the black clouds. As the smoke clears, I see the blanket of bodies on the floor. Jokoye lies unconscious, leg twisted in half. Mother runs forward, igniting the emerald glow in her chest. But Amari doesn't back down. My eyes widen when a navy light flickers to life behind her ribs. Magic swirls around Amari's body like a typhoon, spreading through every limb.
Yami Yara!
She screams. Blue light radiates from her hands in waves, pushing through the soldiers in her way. Mother cries out, arching backward in pain. She grabs her head as she falls to the floor. Her golden mask skitters across the stone. My chest clenches as Amari raises her hand to me. But when we lock eyes, she doesn't strike. Even as our armies collide, I see my sister. I see my blood.
Amari!
My steps falter as I try to slow, but Ojore drags me around the corner. I struggle to stay upright as he pushes me up a flight of stairs. We race down a long hall, pulse spiking as the rumble of the Iyika grows near.
In here!
Ojore pushes me into a cramped room, pressing a hand to my mouth. Sweat drips down my face as the Iyika's boots thunder toward us. I flinch when they pass. Ojore doesn't move until their footsteps die for good. I peek out of the room to see the Iyika disappear up another flight of stairs.
Skies!
Ojore trembles, bracing himself against the stone wall. Though I try to breathe, my throat tightens the further away Zeli gets. Her spirit tugs at mine. It's as if she's still anchored to my soul. I attempt to pull her into my dreamscape, but when my magic sparks, a splitting pain erupts in my head.
Are you okay?
Ojore grabs me as I double over, and I nod. But even in this temple, I can't move into the dreamscape.
Stay here, Ojore orders. I'm going back for the others.
I hold the bronze piece tight as he turns to run back for my mother and Jokoye. When he disappears around the corner, I look to the stairs again. I ignore every voice that screams at me to stop as I sprint after Zeli's sea salt soul. Chapter 41. Zeli.
Zeli!
My muscles tense as Inan's voice echoes up the stairwell. I look back to find him standing in the hall. A crimson trail leaks from beneath his hairline and down his jaw. The char of the explosion mars his breastplate. He wavers as he unfastens it and throws the armor to the ground. His voice escapes in a grated rasp.
I just want to talk.
Those five words are all it takes for me to snap. My fingers wrap around my staff. My vision flashes white as I charge at him. The temple blurs behind Inan's amber eyes. Shouts die under the roar of his lies. If it weren't for him, I wouldn't have my scars. Baba would still be alive.
I don't want to fight,
he says, raising his hands in surrender. I bare my teeth and throw my weight forward.
Then stand still and die.
The air clings as my staff collides with the hard metal of his sword. The familiar collision reverberates through my skin, propelling me to strike again. My body moves beyond my control, the memory of Baba's blood consuming all thought. Yet in my blows, I feel the echo of Inan's touch, his breath, his kiss.
Zeli, please, he shouts. We still want the same things. We can end this fight.
As my staff collides with his sword again, I remember the fantasy of our Orisha, the kingdom we were to rule together.
I swing my staff at his neck, yet he only brings his sword up to defend himself. I can't tell if he's too injured to fight or if he can't attack because it's me. Despite his hesitation, I hold on to my rage, stoking the fire in my core. He has to pay for what he did. If it weren't for him, Titans and centers wouldn't exist at all. I shift my weight, twisting Inan's sword from his hands. Before he can react, I extend my blades. My spear slices through his side. Inan cries out, pitching into the wall. Crimson blood leaks from between his fingers, dripping onto the floor. Now's my chance. My nostrils flare as I drive my knee into his gut. He wheezes and falls to the ground. Pressure builds in my chest as I straddle him.
Zaylee, please.
Magic nips at my skin, but I ignore it to position the blade in my staff above his heart. I don't want my powers for this. I want to feel him take his last breath.
I'm sorry.
He chokes out the words. His warm blood seeps onto my skin. A lump forms in my throat. Moons ago, it was Baba's blood on my hands instead of his.
I'm not.
I speak the words, needing them to be true. Because when Inan's gone, my scars won't hurt. Baba's death will be avenged. When he's dead, I'll be able to breathe again. I'll finally be free.
Jagun, Jagun!
Mazeli's voice stops time. I whip around, praying he's farther away than he sounds. Mazeli speeds down the stairs, lips trembling as he lifts his shaking hands. It's only then that I hear the footsteps behind me. I turn to see an admiral charging forward, his sword poised to cut me down.
Ojore, no!
Inan throws me off of him, reaching for his blade. I prepare to defend myself, but Inan uses his sword to block his admiral's attack.
What are you doing?
Ojore yells. I wonder the same thing, but with Mazeli in danger, I don't have time to think.
Come on!
I grab my second's arm, pulling him down the hall. I glance back to see Inan collapse, unable to stand with the wound in his side.
I need a medic!
The admiral's shouts echo as we run up the stairs. I squeeze Mazeli's hand as I struggle to hide my tears. Chapter 42. Inan. I wince as Ojore ties the last bandage around my abdomen. With the help of another soldier, he moves me onto a canvas stretcher. The two grunt as they lift me up. I pretend to keep my eyes closed with pain as we move through the sacred halls. Without the threat of the Eyika, the only sounds around us are the moans of the wounded and the voices of medics who move to help them. What were you thinking? My heart thunders in my chest as I glance up at Ojore. He hasn't said a word since my sword met his, but I know it's only a matter of time. If he tells Mother what I did... I squeeze the bronze piece, banishing the thought. I'm the king. It's his word against mine.
Inan!
Mother rises when we exit the temple grounds. She pushes off the healer tending to her half-treated burns.
What happened?
She snaps at Ojore.
You're supposed to protect him with your life.
Mother, he did. I rush to his defense. Ojore stopped a blade from going through my heart. Mother's face falls, and she throws her arms around Ojore's neck.
Skies, boy, how many times will we have to thank you for saving his life?
Ojore locks eyes with me, jaw clenching tight. No thanks necessary, he says. I'd do it any time. I swallow and avoid his gaze. I don't know how long he'll let my lie stand, but at least my secret's safe for now. I can't explain what happened in the temple. I barely understand it myself. Zaylee looked at that boy and somehow, it was greater than my pain. I couldn't stomach the thought of being the reason she lost someone else.
You need to get to safety.
Mother ushers us along. The others are waiting across the bridge. What are you doing? I ask. My fingers grow cold as she hooks her golden mask over her nose.
This place only serves our enemies.
No, I jerk up, wincing at the pain that shoots up my side. This temple may be the oldest Orisha has. It holds the stories of our past. Though Shendomble wasn't created for me, I feel its pulse like the beating heart of this land. I remember wandering its hallowed grounds in search of Zeli's path moons ago, kneeling before the portrait of Ori. This temple was the one place that could quiet the noise in my head. You can't, I say. I forbid it. Mother purses her lips. I can almost see her swallowing everything she wants to yell.
This is a den for rebellious maggots, she hisses. Not some historical site.
Ojore eyes me, but I don't back down. The Iyika came here for power, I say. We can use the temple to seize some for ourselves.
Inan, look around you.
Mother shakes her head.
Look at what they've done.
She points behind me, and I see the endless trail of bodies being carried out. Though most of the soldiers head for the healers, there are those who no longer breathe. The sight of every new corpse that piles up before the bridge lands like a punch to the gut. Jokoye passes us on a medic's stretcher, still unconscious. Someone's reset her leg, but blood leaks through the bandages. My chin quivers at the sight. Would she have gotten hurt if I hadn't wanted Zeli and Amari taken in alive?
You do not serve the Magi, Mother continues. You do not even serve these lands. Your duty as king is to protect the throne and the people who bow before it.
I exhale, knowing I have no other choice. Destroy it, I order, though it hurts to speak the words. My chest falls as Mother marches forward with her titans that still stand. As she walks the carnage in her path, I know she's right. Our enemies are gaining ground. We need to eliminate every asset they have. But how long can both sides keep going like this before we destroy Orisha? Mother's titans form a circle around her as the last of the soldiers is carried away from the temple grounds. She opens her hands, igniting the emerald glow in her chest. Veins bulge against her neck, and the ground begins to shake. Her titans seize as she sucks the power from their veins.
More!
Mother shouts. The earth's vibration rattles my teeth as her titans fall to their knees. The green light shoots out of her eyes, and she punches her fists into the dirt. The ground cracks on impact. The fissure speeds through the jungle, tearing up the earth in its path. Its rumble grows the closer it gets to the temple. When it reaches the hallowed grounds, it's like a dozen bombs go off at once. The temple falls as the ground beneath it sinks into the earth.
Skies!
Ojore curses at Mother's power, shielding his nose. I cover my eyes as the rock explodes, debris clouding up the sky. Up ahead, a titan cries out before his body falls limp. He's dead before he hits the ground. Mother's magic has taken everything from him. I have to end this war. The thought echoes through my mind as I grab the wound in my side. The battles are spinning out of control. If we continue at this rate, the entire kingdom will be destroyed in the process. I squeeze the bronze piece tight, searching for another way out of this fight. If Zeli won't listen to me, I'll find someone who will.
Chapter 43. Amari. 4 long days pass before we make it back to the sanctuary. This high above the clouds, the haven is at peace, ignorant of the chaos sweeping the lands at the mountain's feet. By the time we step onto the first mountain, my legs drag like they are made of marble. The sanctuary lies in a calm silence, majestic towers painted in dark silhouettes across the indigo sky.
Yimoya Esheo!
Now drops to her knees and kisses the wild grass with gratitude. I almost join her, but if I fall now, I won't be able to rise again. It feels like a sin to enter these hallowed grounds with the blood, dirt, and grime coating our weary bodies. My legs sway and I stumble forward, resting against the obsidian wall of the main tower.
Need a hand?
I look up to find Zane's smile, and it warms me to my core. Were you waiting for me? I ask, and he shrugs.
I missed you too much.
I rest my head against his broad chest, finding refuge inside his arms. I missed you too, I whisper. It was strange being out there without you. I don't know the last time I went into battle without Zane by my side. It used to be the two of us who didn't have magic at our disposal, yet I always trusted him more than I trusted anyone else. I squeeze him tight, attempting to close the space that's grown between us since I became a Titan. I don't want it to increase now that I know I'm a center. Behind me, Zane catches Zaylee's eyes as she dismounts Nyla. She waves at him with a smile before turning back to Mazeli.
Did you get what you wanted?
Zane asks. In a way, I look back as the elders start unloading their scrolls, taking them to the council room. After what we learned at Chendomble, we have a fighting chance. I might even have enough power to face my mother and force the monarchy to surrender. Zane's muscles relax at the news and he pulls me closer to his chest.
Then you can take the throne?
I smile. Then I can take the throne. But as we stand wrapped up in each other's arms, his touch erases all thoughts of the war, of centers, of the throne. Breathing in his sandalwood scent, I realize how much I want him, how much I want more.
What is it?
Zane pulls away, sensing my shift. I wrap my arms around his neck. What's it going to take for you to carry me to a bath? Zane purses his lips in false contemplation, scratching his chin. Then, without warning, he sweeps me off my feet. I laugh as he carries me across the stone bridge. It's that easy? I ask.
Of course, Zane grins. I live to serve, my queen.
Though he jokes, his words heat my skin. He's the only one who looks at me like I deserve that title. The one person who believes I can lead. I raise my hand to his stubbled cheek and my gaze settles on his lips. I imagine what a few hours with him might entail. How his kiss might feel.
Is there anything else I can help you with, my queen?
My smile widens as he leans in. My heart speeds up in my chest as I dig my nails into his neck. Our lips meet, and the rush is so strong it spreads through my entire body. A flutter erupts between my legs as I shift, pressing into him.
Where do you think you're going?
Our heads snap apart to face Jahi. My cheeks flush at the window's glare. I force Zane to put me down.
We have work to do.
Jahi gestures to the line of elders making their way to the council room, and I groan. Can't we sleep?
Don't complain now,
he says. You're the one who wanted this job.
My shoulders slump, and I turn to Zane, wrapping my arms around him again. I feel his chest deflate as he slides his hands across my back. Another time? I ask.
Do what you need to do.
His lips meet mine once more, and I sink into the safety of his kiss. He squeezes my waist, sending shivers along my skin. As I pull away, I wish I never had to leave his embrace. But Orisha waits for no one, not even him. Jahi eyes me when I pass, but I ignore his glare. Wake Mama Agba, I order. If anyone can get us answers, it's her. No one speaks as Mama Agba studies the golden script along Zaylee's skin. My shoulders burn from holding up the blanket that shields Zaylee's scars and back from the other elders. Mama Agba pauses to scribble more Senbaria translations onto a brown parchment, the scratch of her reed brush echoing against the stained glass windows of the council room. A full hour passes before Mama Agba sets her brush down, ready to share what she's uncovered.
I haven't seen markings like this since I studied with the Centauros, she says. The tattoos are the mark of the Moonstone, a sister to the Sunstone you retrieved from Ibeji.
But the Sunstone was destroyed in the ritual. Zaylee tilts her head. It shattered in my hands after I used it to bring our magic back.
Unlike its sister stone, the Moonstone is not one you can hold.
Mama Agba explains.
It is a power bestowed by the gods. They must have granted it to you during the solstice.
Mama Agba waits as Zaylee slips into a sleeveless kaftan, its deep purple fabric shimmering like wine against her complexion. When dressed, Zaylee takes her place at the table, sitting in front of a bronze statue with amethyst crystals for eyes.
The Moonstone ignites by command, Mama Agba continues. Few can summon its power.
She rests her weathered fingers along Zaylee's sternum before reciting the sacred words.
Etona Agbarai.
Zaylee inhales a sharp breath as the tattoos ignite along her skin. The delicate lines glow with golden light, so strong it shines through the wine-colored kaftan. Though not as bright as their shine in the scroll room, the sight still steals my words. Zaylee looks like a goddess, bathing us in her golden glow.
The Moonstone has the ability to bind the life forces inside all of us,
Mama Agba explains.
If you were granted this ability during the sacred ritual, it would explain the origin of Omari and Nahanda's abilities. It may be possible to use the Moonstone to make more centers like them.
Wait, what? I lean forward, mouth falling slack. More centers would give us more power. We would have more leverage to negotiate the end of this war. Would they be as strong as my mother?
The power might not exhibit itself the same way, but any Magi who could hold that much Ashe in her body would be able to perform great feats.
Mama Agba nods.
A Tider could generate a tsunami with just a wave of her hands. A Seer in her prime might be able to see through any point in time, but pursuing great power requires great sacrifice.
Mama Agba pauses, eyes settling on me.
You and your mother are centers now, but didn't you have to sacrifice someone you love?
My throat dries, and I avert my gaze, back burning with the memories. In a way, I say, I killed my father on the ritual grounds. Mama Agba exhales a deep breath and purses her lips. She removes her hand from Zaylee's chest, and without her touch, the golden glow of the Moonstone's tattoos dies.
If you wish to create another center, you must be willing to make such a sacrifice.
Mama Agba says,
a loss of that magnitude is the only thing that can come close to the power used to create the centers during the solstice.
What if I could find another way? Zeli asks. Use the moonstone to bind our life forces without killing someone we love.
Even if you could, the connection would not last.
Mama Agba shakes her head.
A power that volatile would consume anyone it touched, and binding yourself to someone's life force means binding yourself to their death.
Mama Agba's eyes hang on Zeli as she grabs her staff and rises from her seat.
You are the elders now. It is not my place to tell you what to do. But you should know that there are weapons so great they shouldn't be used.
A heavy silence hangs over us as Mama Agba exits the council room. Around the table, everyone seems to weigh her words, the cost of what it would take to become a center. But in her explanation, I see our answer, our leverage, our peace. We have the power to win this war without losing one more soul. We can create the Orisha we want to see. We went to Chendomble to gain power over Nehanda, and now we have it. I address the room. We could build an entire army with centers as strong as my mother. With a threat like that, the monarchy would have no choice but to concede to us. I rise from my seat, picturing my brother's face when I tell him the power at our disposal. Allow me to go to Lagos and meet with Inan. I know I can negotiate peace on our terms.
Your terms?
Kenyon scoffs. Not ours. Our future is uncertain until we have a Magi on the throne. No one in the palace will agree to that.
Kenyon stands up, slapping his palms against the table.
With Zeli's ability, we have the power we need. Now it's time to use it and take Lagos down for good.
Idiot. Now smacks her lips. We'd have to sacrifice someone we love. Lives will be lost no matter what approach we take.
Kenyon pushes.
At least this way, sacrifices won't be made in vain.
I refuse to spill Magi blood.
Kamaru's voice shakes with a quiet rage.
If we can't win this war as Magi, then we deserve to lose.
One by one, heads drift to Zeli, looking to her for the final say. I lock eyes with her as we wait, but she avoids my gaze. All I'm asking for is a chance to find out if peace is a viable option. I rise from my seat, kneeling before Zeli. I know you heard Inan when he told his soldiers not to attack. For Sky's sake, he risked his life so you and Mazeli could escape. Her muscles tense as I grab her hand, but I don't back down. He still cares for you. I lower my voice. I know you care too.
No!
She rips her hand away, balling her fingers into a fist.
We can't trust him. We can't trust any of them.
Zeli,
I only ask for one thing when I join this fight.
She cuts me off.
All I wanted was to end Inan.
He's my blood. I narrow my eyes. You know I could never agree to that.
Well, this is my blood.
Zeli gestures around the stone table.
The Magi won't be safe until your brother's gone.
Her words cut deeper than she could know. It was only a few moons ago when she grabbed my hand and claimed me as her family. She claimed me as her blood. If you won't spare his life, then I won't fight for you. I cross my arms. You need me on your side. I'm the only center you have.
We can make our own.
Naima glares. No, we can't.
Zeli shakes her head.
Mama Akbar's right. It's too dangerous. We're more likely to die trying to make the connection than to match their power. And it's not worth sacrificing someone we love.
She stares at me, and I can feel something fracture between us. There's no hiding it anymore. We don't have the same plan to win this war.
We don't need Amari.
Zeli turns back to the elders.
We don't even need to become centers. We went to Chandomblé to recover our scrolls, and now we have them.
Zeli gestures to the incantations piled against the far wall.
We'll train our magi until they're strong enough to face Nahanda and her titans. And when that day comes, we'll end this war in the only way the monarchy will respect. The way that would make our ancestors proud. That's what I'm talking about!
Now claps, rising out of her seat.
Let's finish this our way, led by the soldier of death.
My chest falls as the other elders jump in, enthralled by their future fight. I stare at Zeli and I know she can feel the heat of my gaze, but she doesn't meet my eye. My chest slumps as I exit the room, unable to stomach the sight. I practically run out of the first tower, not stopping until I meet the cool night air.
Orisha waits for no one.
Father's whisper tickles my ear, reminding me of what I must do. I can't keep waiting for Zeli and the Iyika to see reason. No matter what, they only fight for the Magi. I must fight for the kingdom. Orisha waits for no one, I whisper to myself, bawling my fists. If the elders won't support my plan to win this war, I'll have to do it myself. Chapter 44. Zeli.
High-pitched chimes bleed into my ears, jarring me awake. Though I've only spent a short time swaddled within the mountain walls that cover the sanctuary, I already know what each unique tone means. Low bells commemorate the arrival of new magi. A twinkling melody signals each mealtime. But this piercing timbre is a recent addition, chimes calling us to train. I peel my head up from the Ankara print on my pillow. A sliver of yellow peeks out from my balcony's ledge. I groan and bury myself under the covers. Only Mama Akbar would make us rise before the sun. As the chimes ring, the pit of guilt that's plagued me since Chandomblé settles like a brick in my stomach. How am I supposed to face my reapers, knowing I'm not fit to lead my clan? It's been days, yet my mind won't stop replaying the memory of Mazeli running down the temple stairs. I promised to keep my second safe, to protect him with my life. But as soon as I saw Inan, I abandoned my vow to get my revenge. I was in charge of only one reaper then. What would have happened if I'd led the entire clan? There are so few reapers to begin with. Oya doesn't bless many with our gift. If we're going to win this war and rebuild what the monarchy took, we can't afford to lose any of them. They need an elder they can actually trust. A soft knock raps against my door, forcing me to lift my head. I half expect to find Mazeli's oversized ears when the purple door creaks open, but a sweeping flash of silver peeks through instead.
Mama Agba, I grin at the sight of the silver robe over her dark skin. The crimped garment flows behind her as she walks. It's like she carries a breeze within the silk's folds. Before the raid, past clan elders wore mantles like these, garments to mark their revered status. To wear this robe was as special as wearing the clan elder's headdress.
Eka oro iyawa.
I drag myself out of bed, kneeling before her, despite how my thighs burn. As my nose touches the ground, I think of how many times I should have done this.
how many times we all should have bowed in her presence. As a former elder, Mama Agba was supposed to be celebrated, revered by all. Instead, she spent years hiding who she was, wearing nothing but muted kaftans, while she stitched beautiful garments for nobles until her fingers bled.
Get up, child.
Mama Agba smacks her lips at me, but her mahogany eyes crinkle with emotion. She wraps me in a warm hug, and from the scent of cloves and shuya spices embedded into her silks, I know she's already putting hours in the kitchen.
I wanted to catch you before your first training.
She reaches into her bag and removes an imposing metal collar. The majestic piece stretches the full length of my neck with a base to cover my collarbones.
It's beautiful,
I breathe, touching its spectacular design. Dozens of triangular plates have been stitched together to form its skin, a unique mix of her seamstress skills and Tahir's metalwork.
I thought about making headdresses, but with all the battle you're seeing, these felt more appropriate.
Mama Agba gestures for me to turn around, but I stay still.
You don't like it? She asks.
I shake my head, running my toes over the mosaic tiles along the floor.
I feel like I don't deserve to wear it. I don't think I'm meant to be there, Elder. Is this because of what happened at the temple?
Mama Agba rests her hand on my shoulder, beckoning me toward her.
Being an elder does not mean you won't make mistakes. It only means you keep fighting despite them.
You heard what happened to Mazeli? I ask.
Child, word travels faster in these walls than a chitana in high sprint. I know far more than I want to about all of you.
Mama Agba shakes her head as she turns me toward the mirror.
Apparently, Kenyon set his sights on Naima, but Naima set her sights on Dakarai.
But Dakarai likes Imani.
I know, Mama Agba sighs, and that cancer will eat him alive. It is one giant mess.
I smile to myself as she reaches for the collar. I hope she hasn't heard whispers about Inan.
Or whispers about Rowan.
A flutter spreads through my chest at the thought of the mercenary. One I wish I could erase. Without the constant threat of battle, I find myself thinking of his pink smirk. I remember his calloused touch. At times, I catch myself staring at the sanctuary's entrance, waiting for him to saunter back into my life on some half-baked mission. But even he fades from my mind when Mama Agba places the collar over the golden marks on my throat. As I run my fingers through the thin grooves between each triangular plate, an unexpected swell fills my chest. It reminds me of sitting in her reed ahire after I completed my training, sipping tea before she placed the graduation staff in my hands. In a way, this feels exactly the same, except everything and everyone in our world has changed.
Zaylee, if you were not meant to be an elder, your ascension would have been rejected,
Mama Agba says.
Oya gave you an Ishipaya to mark you as worthy. You wouldn't have seen anything if she did not think you were the best person to lead this clan.
I chew on her words, thinking of what Oya showed me. If I close my eyes, I can still see the purple ribbon of light spinning from my chest like a thread, intertwining with a ribbon of gold. The power they created felt just like the one I sensed in Amari. Back at the temple, I was sure it was a symbol of the centers. But all of Amari's threads were only cobalt blue. If I look at Nahanda's, I'm sure I'd see only emerald greens. Where were the purples, the golds, the tangerines? Mama Agba, I turn to face her.
Even in my head, the question waiting on my lips sounds ridiculous. But I don't know how to account for the colors of light I haven't seen. Is it possible to combine different magic?
Well, the very nature of the centers.
Not like that, I interrupt. Is it possible to combine different types of magic? The magic of people not in the same clan. Mama Agba's eyes go wide and she steps back, brows creasing in thought.
Why do you ask?
In my Ishipaya, I saw different colors. I saw purples mixing with golds. It was a rainbow of color, I explain. A rainbow of power.
I see.
Mama Agba purses her lips. Combining the same magic is rare enough. But to mix different magics. To my knowledge, it has only been done once before. It is the very reason Orisha has magicite at all. My mouth falls slack as Mama Agba tells me the tale of the Grounder and Cancer who combined their magic, a connection so powerful and explosive it created magicite deposits throughout the land. The two magi were killed on impact, Mama Agba explains, but we still feel the effect of their connection today. The deposits they created are what the monarchy have mined for over a century.
Could it happen again? I ask.
In theory, Mama Agba shakes her head. If a connection like that could be sustained, if its wielders could survive, there is no telling what could happen. A grounder and a burner could raise volcanoes from the earth. A reaper and a healer might even be able to raise the dead.
I nod, thinking of the potential at hand. A power like that is difficult to comprehend. It feels even mightier than the gods.
But Zeli, to go that route.
I know, I assure her. It's still not a plan. A gentle chatter rises from below as the Magi leave their dormitories, and Mama Agba and I move to my balcony. I watch as groups traverse the stone bridge to the third mountain, crossing over the natural baths to meet at their clan temples. Mazeli leads Bimpe and Marie, his large ears easy to spot in the crowd. Mama Agba smiles as we look down on them. She rubs her hand up and down my arm. Do you still remember your Ishipaya? I ask, and Mama Agba exhales. A soft smile settles on her face, so bright it lights the room.
I peeked into the beyond, Mama Agba breathes. I kneeled on the mountaintop. Sky Mother welcomed me with open arms.
It sounds beautiful, I whisper.
It was, Mama Agba nods. It's been decades, but I can still remember that special warmth, that love.
Mama Agba straightens my collar and removes my head wrap, shaking out my coils before leading me out the door.
You are the person your reapers need, Elder Zeli. The only person you need to prove it to is yourself.
By the time I make my way to the third mountain, most clans are hard at work. With the exception of the reapers, every other clan has at least a dozen magi who can fight. The Magi gather in front of their clan temples, training while diviners watch. As I pass them on my way to the Reaper Tower at the top of the mountain, the little confidence Mama Agba instilled in me begins to melt.
Not like that,
Naima instructs, shaking her head so hard that a shower of orange flower petals fall from her curls. Dragonflies orbit her head as she repositions a Magi's hands around her chitina's temples.
Feel the connection before you begin the incantation.
The tamer nods and closes his eyes, face stern with concentration. small monkeys skitter across his back as he chants, some hanging from his neck and ears.
Eda inuego, ya mini ojure.
A soft pink light ignites behind the tamer's eyelids, growing in strength. When he opens his eyes, the chitina does as well. The same pink light fills the rider's thin irises. The tamer's mouth hangs open as he gazes at the world through the chitina's eyes. It's like their heads are controlled by the same source. The two even blink in unison. On the ledge above them, Folake leads a demonstration for the lighters, her long white locks tied back. She stretches out her slender fingers, gathering something I can't see.
The trick is to feel the light, like something you can hold in the palm of your hands. Once you can feel it, the incantation is easy. Iboriokukun!
Folake claps her hands together, and in the blink of an eye, darkness descends over the lighter temple. She summons a blackness deeper than any I've ever experienced, like all the stars were plucked from a moonless night. The blackout lasts only an instant, but when light reappears, every Magi's eyes are open wide.
That was amazing. I shake my head. I hope I can be half as good. Reapers ready!
Mazeli's high-pitched voice travels beyond the engraved stone of the Reaper Temple. He stands before our clan in the grassy terrain out back, making Bimpe and Marie chant in harmony.
Emia wontiotisun! Emia wontiotisun! Mokepeyinioni! Mokepeyinioni!
My chest flutters with awe as my reapers conjure animations in unison. Though each spirit holds a unique shape, the animations rise as one, blooming from the grass like a garden of color lilies.
Hold them steady, Mazeli calls. Maintain size!
Marie's animation falls apart while Bimpe's grows large. But the way they work together reminds me of the reapers I knew before the raid.
Jagun, jagun!
Mazeli's face lights when he spots me leaning against the temple. He drops to both knees, bowing as if I were the queen.
What are we going to learn today? He asks. Soul ripping? Spirit tethers? What about... Ow!
Mazeli cries out when Marie punches his arm.
Shut your mouth and let her answer, she hisses. Marie, I'm your second. You can't hit me here.
Bimpe giggles and I smile, remembering the laughter that would echo in Mama Agba's Ahiri. Though real problems awaited us outside her woven reed walls, she still allowed us to have fun. Listening to my reapers now, I realize that this training doesn't have to be about the war. For once, we can celebrate our magic by practicing the incantations that have been passed on through generations. We can bask in the Reaper's return.
Today, we are going to learn an ancient and powerful technique.
I hand Mazeli the scroll I've selected.
Ojijiku?
Mazeli's brows rise as he reads.
Shadows of Death?
You can already conjure animations, I nod. This technique will allow you to strengthen that skill while building another. I step forward and cast in my head, bringing an animation to life with just a wave of my hand. As the spirit rises from the dirt, I remember training alone in the desert, trying to create an animation for the first time. A few moons ago, I couldn't even move one grain of sand. Creating shadows is just like creating animations. But instead of channeling a spirit into the nearest element, you wield it in its raw form. The shadows can take any shape, but the more complicated the vessel, the harder it is to mold.
Stories say your shadows are powerful enough to turn entire armies to ash.
Marie's words make every reaper light up. But the memory of wielding Baba's spirit makes a pit open up in my chest.
When he tore through my blood, the shadows that exploded from my skin were more than powerful. They were death incarnate. What I did at the ritual was fueled by the connection I had with my father, I explain. My magic was amplified from the sacred grounds and centennial solstice. It'd be difficult to wield that kind of strength again.
Can you try?
Marzelli asks. A request the others echo. They all stare at me with hungry eyes. I know they'll need a demonstration. I brace myself for the memories of Baba that will hit with this incantation. But as I prepare to chant, the sun finally rises over our temple. As the rays and shadows move over the mountaintop, I'm reminded of the last time Mama used this incantation. It was years ago, back when I still lived in Ibadan. Zane dared me to climb a mountaintop, and Mama screamed when I leapt off the cliffs. Who knows what would have happened if she hadn't conjured the shadows of death that carried me down into one of Ibadan's ice-cold lakes. A smile comes to my face as I walk to the front of our temple. Just ahead lies the perfect cliff. It juts out over the waterfall bath, meters below.
Pay attention,
I shout before I take off, sprinting for the ledge. The others yell after me as I run. I lift my head to the whipping winds. A freedom I haven't felt since I was a girl wraps around me, propelling me on. Magic rises like a wave preparing to crest. With a final step, I leap from the ledge.
Emioku, baaye ninumi.
My incantation falls away in the rush of air and I spread out every limb. For a moment, I get to soar.
Jade ninu awon jijire.
As the water rushes toward me, it's like I'm 6 years old again. Baba and Mama are still alive. No one I love ever has to die.
Yipada lati owo mi.
The final words of the incantation make the air ripple around me. Spirits of the dead explode from my back. The purple auras of the shadows are so dark, they are almost black. The shadows ride through the air like sparks, coming together as my mold takes form. The cold spirits spread across my back and wrap around my arms, creating a glider that cuts through the sky. Laughter erupts from deep inside me as I soar. For an instant, I rise above all my pain. I feel the freedom I've craved. I soar until I land on the waterfall's bank with a lurch. The shadows disappear in wisps of smoke. I turn to find every reaper cheering from the cliff, joined by other magi who observed the feat.
All right, I point up at Marzelli. Let's see if you fly or make a splash.
His face falls as he looks at the water.
But I can't swim.
My grin turns mischievous, and I shrug.
Then the greatest reaper who ever lived better get it right on the first try.
Chapter 45. Amari. I breathe a sigh of relief when the twinkling dinner chimes ring. After a week of training, I expected the ice to melt between me and the other connectors. But if anything, it's only thickened. I lift my chin as the magi stop mid-incantation, gathering their things to make their way down the mountain.
We start at sunrise tomorrow,
I call at their backs. No one even turns around. A sour taste settles on my tongue as I clean up the scrolls, revealing the ceramic tiles that create a connector baji on the floor. It doesn't matter what I do. As long as Ramaya lies in the infirmary, I'm still the enemy. If I wasn't a center, they might even attack me in her name. Every time someone masters another incantation, I half expect them to slip and throw it in my direction. Focus, Amari.
I attempt to shake the stench of disapproval as I close the door to the connector temple. I unravel the cobalt scroll in my hand, struggling to piece together the Senbaria transcribed inside. Emi ni monwa, I whisper the Yoruba. Jeki emi reshi simi. My fingers spark with blue light as I close my eyes, trying to make the incantation come to life. When I first discovered the scroll to create a dreamscape a few days ago, I nearly tossed it aside. I didn't realize what I held. I was searching for incantations that would help the connectors in battle. The ability to create a special plane and meld with someone else's mind wasn't something we could use. But as I pondered the incantation, I realized the gods had given me exactly what I needed. If I can create my own dreamscape, I can make contact with Inan without anyone finding out. We can finally talk without our armies at our backs and evaluate our chances for peace. Emi ni monwa, jeki emi reshisimi, I repeat. Emi ni monwa, jeki emi reshisimi. I try to picture the space in my mind, to push my magic through my hands once more. But even in the silence of the connector temple, the incantation won't take. I throw my head back in frustration. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. The other incantations have been difficult to master, but no matter how many times I try to cast this one, it never comes. Every day that goes by is another day the monarchy could attack, a day the Iyika could decide to march on Lagos. If I'm going to figure this out in time to stop this war, I can't do it alone. I need Zeli's help. Skies. I struggle to swallow as I roll up the scroll. Despite our differences, Zeli's helped me learn the Yoruba I needed to train the connectors. By this point, I've taken dozens of scrolls to her for assistance. But if she figures out why I want to learn this one, I shake my head and exhale as I walk out the temple's navy door. I just need help with an incantation. That's all she needs to know.
Watch out!
I throw myself back as Mazeli zips past, his large ears practically flap in the wind. The end of an incantation flies from his lips as he leaps from the nearest cliff.
Yipada latio womi.
A lavender cloud erupts from his back, engulfing him as he falls. He screams with delight as the cloud begins to solidify, forming wings around his arms.
I'm doing it!
Mazeli stretches out his hands in triumph as he nears the landing at the waterfall's bank. But right as he's about to land, the cloud disappears. He claws at the air before hitting the water with a loud splash.
Damn it!
Mazeli breaks through the surface, glaring at all who laugh. He slaps the water with his hands.
I don't understand. There were wings that time. I saw them. More like feathers than wings.
Marie calls out as she glides down on shadows from the ledge above him. A triumphant smile on her young face. She wields her shadows with a particular finesse, practically floating to the ground.
Marie, hush.
Zeli walks into the water, beckoning for her reapers to follow after her.
You're close, Mazeli, but your Ojiji are still too soft. Your shadows are light because the spirits are struggling to keep form.
I watch from my perch on the ledge above, as the three reapers form a circle around Zeli, despite the setting sun. The two of us wear the same color, but Zeli's seems to fit like a second skin. With the way her golden tattoos shimmer beneath the rippling water, I am far from the only person who stares. What I wouldn't give to have just one Magi look at me that way.
Amari!
Zeli catches my eye, waving at me from below. I force a smile as she sends her reapers ahead.
How today's training go?
Better, I lie. But I need your help. I was thinking of teaching this incantation tomorrow. Could you help me with the words?
I walk down to the bottom of the ledge and hand Zelie the scroll when she exits the water, but her smile fades as she reads the Sinbaria.
You want to teach them about the dreamscapes?
You say it like you've heard of that before.
I have.
Her gaze grows distant.
I'm surprised at the way her face softens.
Your brother took me into one a few times. I never knew if it existed in his mind or mine.
How did he get you there? I lean in. Could you summon it as well?
Zelie starts to answer my question, but stops, pulling the scroll to her chest.
Why this incantation? What use will it be when we march on Lagos?
My ears heat as I scramble for a lie.
For God's sakes, Zelie shakes her head. Tell me you're not this stupid.
How is it stupid to want to contact my brother? I ask. To explore the possibility of peace. I know you hate him, but Inan saved your life.
It's what he does, Zelie snarls. He'll do the right thing when it's easy, but when it matters most, he'll stab you in the back. You can't trust him, Amari. All he leaves us with are scars.
Is this because you don't trust him, or because you don't want to be honest with yourself?
Zelie's eyes flash and she stiffens.
You'd better choose your words with care.
You keep pretending all you want is to kill my brother. But I saw the way you two looked at each other at Chendomble. I know there's more in your heart than rage.
I point at her chest.
If you want to lie to yourself about how you really feel, fine. But if you damn us to this warpath, you're putting innocent lives on the line.
I reach for the incantation, but Zelie pushes me back. As I stumble, she throws the scroll in the natural baths, stomping it out with her foot.
Stop! I scream,
running into the water. I try to rip the scroll from her foot, but I only rip it in half. Ancient ink bleeds into the water as I fumble with the fraying parchment. My hands shake as I look back up at her.
What's wrong with you? That incantation could have ended this war.
You said it yourself, Zelie pants, walking back to the bank. In the hands of an enemy, those scrolls are a weapon. Don't try to communicate with your brother again.
Blue wisps of magic spark at my fingertips, burning my skin. How dare she do this to me? How dare she give me a command?
I'm starting to think the reason you don't want peace is because you're getting used to the idea of taking my throne. I spit.
Zelie stops in her tracks, the muscles tense in her back. I watch as her fingers clench, but she doesn't turn around.
Get back to training, she says through her teeth.
I don't want to hear about this again. She steps onto the stone bridge, abandoning me for the second mountain. I don't understand why she can't see beyond her rage. Why don't any of the Ayika realize this is what's best?
My throat closes up as I reach down, attempting to salvage the soaked pieces of the scroll.
Do you need a hand, Elder Amari?
I look to the bank. Mama Agba greets me with a sad smile on her face. The tears I try to fight threaten to break free, so I stare at the rippling water until they disappear.
Why is everyone fighting against me?
I shake my head.
Come, child.
Mama Agba waves me forward.
I may be able to help you understand.
I'm still shaking with anger as we make our way into the gardens on the first mountain. Mama Agba rubs her hand up and down my arm, forcing me to exhale.
Breathe, child.
I take a deep breath as Mama Agba leads me through the entryway of the gardens.
located at the top of the main tower. They shine with a wild beauty. Banana leaves in perfect harmony with the sunset blossoms hanging over our heads.
Just ahead.
Mama Agba gestures to a weathered bench in the back, ravaged by vegetation.
That one has always been my favorite. The moss forms an excellent cushion.
As we walk the lantern-lit path, I think of how the broken stone and unkept greenery are so different from the manicured lawns of the palace. Overgrown vines weave themselves around the surrounding stone fixtures, creating natural tapestries around the old benches and cracked gazebos. They're nothing like the royal gardens, where only the most perfect carnations were allowed to grow. Like everything else in the palace, they were strangled, controlled.
I used to sit here all the time.
Mama Agba sinks into the moss as if it were a luxurious bath.
The temples were created for meditation, but somehow I always found the greatest peace right here.
I wait for her to release whatever scolding she must be holding back, but she allows the chorus of jungle cicadas to ring out in our silence. As it stretches, I realize she's not waiting to speak. She's waiting to listen. I open my mouth, but it's hard to find the right words. It feels like I'm always fighting to be heard. I don't remember the last time I was able to have a simple conversation about this war. Is it wrong to fight for peace? I ask.
I think life is more complicated than right and wrong,
Mama Agba answers.
I think you will never obtain peace trying to prove either one.
I sink back down and stare out at the gardens. Across from us, two tiders sit in a stone gazebo. One kneels while the other uses a knife to shave her head. As thick tufts of white hair fall to the gazebo floor, I realize the girl's motivation. She's shaving her head to match Nao's. She respects her elder so much, she wants to mirror her. I know my brother has made mistakes, I say. More mistakes than most, but no one will ever understand.